Hello, interwebs, and welcome to the Long Road Podcast, your Star Trek Enterprise rewatch podcast slash commentary track with me, your host, Jesse Gender. That was about the fifth time I recorded this intro because I kept just screwing it up every single time. So I'm glad that I finally got it. But yes, for this podcast, we are going to be listening or rewatching the third episode of Star Trek Enterprise, Strange New World. And I am honestly very, very, very excited to watch this episode for a few reasons, actually. So if you're listening to this now, many of you may know that I just recently moved from Los Angeles to Seattle for a brand new job. And I drove a U-Haul out. I took the like 3-day trip to get all the way up here. So I did indeed take the long road getting from there to here. I had to do it. It's like the only recurring joke. I'm sorry. I had to do it, folks. But this is going to be the very first episode of Star Trek that I watch in this brand new apartment in my brand new sort of like mini studio. It's just like kind of a small room that I have here, but it's a dedicated room to my YouTube stuff, which is kind of exciting. So yeah, I'm kind of christening this space with its first podcast recording, which I am very excited about. So yeah. Kind of strange new worlds for everyone, right? It's kind of like we're all doing strange new... I gotta stop trying to make the weird Star Trek puns. But that's why you love me, right? So getting on to the subject, before we get started on the actual commentary, for which I'll give you a countdown when we start so you can sync up your episode with this commentary track, I should say I am honestly very excited for this episode. I do vaguely remember it. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but I remember it being kind of the first episode of Star Trek Enterprise that really kind of felt that it was trying to pay off its premise of like humanity going to the stars for the very first time and doing it in a way that felt more episodic and less grand. I mean, obviously I keep screwing that up. It's Broken Bow, not Broken Bow, was sort of this like heightened action adventure sort of fun thing going on here. And Fight or Flight, it did kind of have that like first event of a ship or crew, but this was like the first episode that really was like, oh, this is a typical Star Trek thing. We're going to a new planet that feels like a big deal for these versions of Star Trek characters, as opposed to like Kirk or Picard or anyone else who would just, you know, go down to a planet and not really think anything of it. So it really felt like this episode was the first one paying off a lot of its sort of concept and doing it in an episodic way instead of sort of a big, grand, big and bold way. We'll talk about it more as I get into the commentary of it, but that's part of why I really like the early Star Trek Enterprise episodes is that, yeah, the episodes are kind of boring, and we talked about this last episode. I think they are a lot less interesting than much more action-packed episodes of, like, Discovery or much more thoughtful episodes of Next Generation or Deep Space Nine or even Voyager, but I like that it just feels kind of very human and feels very human in its, you know, it's their human's excitement, humanity's excitement in each episode, and also kind of the mundanity and banalness that gets approached to these sort of things. So we'll see if that memory holds up, but I remember this episode also being kind of dull, but being kind of special for that and kind of special for why I like Star Trek Enterprise season one as a whole, because it is sort of like that interesting in how banal it is, which I know sounds really weird, but you know, it's a big franchise, so there's room for different flavors of the same thing. So let's jump in. So I'm gonna sync up. I'm watching this episode on Netflix, so we're gonna hit it in I'm gonna give you a 3-second countdown. We're gonna start in just a second. So ready, 3, 2, 1, and go. We're fading in on a picture of termites of Lorcas Prime, just so you know where we're at. So he just printed in. The crew member is sipping on some soup, and the guy just spoke. So there we are. You know, everyone always forgets about this, about Star Trek, early Star Trek Enterprise, but these crew members that we're watching right here, these are actually recurring characters on Star Trek Enterprise, these sort of lower deck ensigns on the NX-01. I forget the actress's name here. She'll be coming back a few times. I think she has like a romance with Phlox later on. Oh, look at that beautiful planet. Everyone's excited. This is... Again, this is what I was talking about, the banality of Star Trek Enterprise. Like, this is just a planet, but they're just so excited about it, and that's just so cool. Anyways, I just like that we get to see these Lower Decks characters. Like, before Lower Decks was doing Lower Decks, Star Trek Enterprise was doing Lower Decks and showing these Lower Deck crew members. Unfortunately, I believe the actress here, who recurs a few times and has, like, a romance with Phlox later on, I think she unfortunately passed away between Season 1 and Season 2 of Star Trek Enterprise. So unfortunately they decided to sort of cut that recurring storyline with the Lower Decks rumors, which is sad because I liked that we got that differing perspective, from the bridge crew here, and sort of taking that Lower Decks approach. Again, Enterprise was doing Lower Decks before Lower Decks was doing Lower Decks. And I think that that's kind of cool. And it's something that the show doesn't really get any credit for. Plant a flag, do it. Reed just wants to plant a flag and everything. Ah, dang you to Paul and your protocols. No one likes your protocols, you dang Vulcan. Oops, sorry. I think I think some of Archer's racism is rubbing off on me. Oh, the first reference of the Class M planet. I thought that was cool. You would think that they would know Minshar class if they've been going in training to go out in space. I'm also about to open up a drink, so if you hear a beer, it's not a beer, it's a La Croix, because I'm a good millennial. But humans are stupid, so we're just going to go all the way in. No, but all joking aside, I do really like that humanity, I do like this sort of contrast between humanity and Vulcan that continually comes up. I think contrasting humanity with Vulcans is great, because it shows like the very scientific mind that the Vulcans have. Sorry, one second, I gotta stop. Getting from there to here, it's been a long time, but my time is finally near, and I will see my dreams come alive at last. It's dream, not dreams. I will touch the sky, and they're not gonna hold me down no more. No, they're not gonna change my mind, 'cause I've got faith of the heart, and knowing where my heart will take me. You didn't hear that. I've got faith to believe I can do anything. I've got strength of the soul. No one's gonna bend or break me. I can reach any star. I've got faith. I've got faith. Faith of the heart. Yeah. But anyways, as I was saying, I'm sorry, I just have to sing the theme song. You guys all seem to want me to sing it, and I like singing it, so we're going to do it. But yeah, I like the contrast between humanity and Vulcan, and Vulcan sort of being a stand-in for the more scientific mind, and like humanity being like the gung-ho, like, we just want to explore things. We're really curious. Come on, let us do the thing. Come on, Mom. I just want to do the thing. It sounds like fun. Hey, look, this episode passes the Bechdel test. Look at that. Two women talking to each other, not about a guy. I mean, I guess that makes sense. I mean, that would be why you would be selected. Why is she all butthurt about that? I do know that T'Pol's supposed to be the grading one on the ship, but I do find it mildly annoying, and this will become a bigger issue between her and Hoshi later on, but, like, that all the women characters on this show kind of don't like each other. That's kind of very, very frustrating, especially in, like, light of Star Trek Discovery nowadays, where it feels like there's so many great friendships on that show and so many great female friendships on that show. So I am a bit disappointed in early Star Trek Enterprise, where, I mean, in a lot of Star Trek in general, for how it treats women pre Discovery era. Oh, Porthos, I love Porthos peeing on the tree. But I do like, I dislike that the women have, the women are kind of angry at each other about the show. I also will say there's a funny anecdote that I remember hearing from Connor Trinneer. I think he talked about it at a Star Trek convention. I just happened to listen to it on YouTube. The dog that plays Porthos is actually a girl dog, not a boy dog. So in that scene right here where Porthos is supposedly peeing on the tree going where no dog has gone before, they couldn't get the dog to lift its leg on the tree because it's a girl dog. It doesn't, for, you know, without being too, the hover hand, but oh no, Archer. Oh, I'm sorry. I have to stop that story right there. Oh, that was an uncomfortable moment. Archer gives the hover hand and then he tells her to smile. Oh no, you would be canceled in a heartbeat there, Archer, telling a woman to smile. Jesus. Oh, that was that. That's a rough moment. That felt like a Rick Berman moment right there, if I ever saw one. Except for Rick Berman would probably be much worse. Probably tell T'Pol to get a bigger bra size. But that's a different discussion for a different day. If you can tell, I'm not a big fan of Rick Berman. Brandon Braga, I actually think is a pretty fine dude. I don't always love Brandon Braga's writing, but I do like Brandon Braga. Rick Berman, though, whoa. Oh, look at that guy standing out there in that CGI field. Look at how deep he is smelling flowers. Why do all planets look like the California wilderness? I just watched an episode of Deep Space Nine, and I think they also filmed in this exact same woods, like this, like green but slightly dry woods. Also, I feel bad for all these actors. Like, it's got to, I mean, I know it's probably they didn't film this in summer, but maybe they did, but it had to be hot. And they're wearing all these jumpsuits. Where is this? I'm curious. Probably Big Bear, maybe? Probably shot this in Big Bear. I don't know. Also, I love those NX-01 hats. I want one of those NX-01 hats. If any of you out there want to get me in... No, I'm not going to ask my audience to buy me stuff. I should buy one of those NX-01 hats at some point. I'm not going to be Steve Shives here with his Niners hats. No, I'm gonna get myself an NX-01 hat and be one of the cool kids. We would? I do miss camping. Camping is fun. Ruin all the fun, T'Pol. Pitch your tent. I'm not dirty. My mind's not in the gutter. I'm sorry, everybody. Space fireflies. Ooh. 63 years. I do like this sort of like updated scary stories. Like, it's very human, very camping, very like, you know, sort of thing to tell the ghost stories. But I like that they attempted to tell like a scary ghost story in like a Star Trek future. And I like that Travis gets this scene. It was empty. I just like T'Pol in the background, just not giving a crap. Great, great acting by Jolene Blaylock. Just like, and I like the director's choice to just have her sort of out of focus in the background. And it kind of shows how all these characters aren't paying attention to her at all. So we get her in the shot sort of, you know, being rigid and unpaying attention, but she's out of focus, just like she's out of the focus of the crew's minds. Very, very well done directing in terms of cinematography in this scene, I think. And blocking too, just to Paul right there off to the side. See, Trip is me. I like that. I love that. There's got to be like a what a Vulcan ghost story would be. It's like, and then he came out of the woods and had an emotion. How illogical. Nerd. Again, it's sort of evoking that Star Trek future of like, hey, they're inspired by the stars. They want to go out and see space. I like that. It's a small, subtle thing, and they do harp on it a lot throughout Enterprise, but I just like this idea of, like, everyone in this, by this point, is like, yeah, humanity is still kind of rough around the edges, but they've hit the point where they're just inspired to be better. You know, that's one thing, you never, it does a little bit towards later Star Trek Enterprise, and even hints in earlier Star Trek Enterprise, but we don't really ever get too much discussion really throughout all of Star Trek, to be honest, though Deep Space Nine did a little bit, but we don't really get any discussion around what government and politics looks like at this point in humanity's future. Like, clearly there's some sort of one world government, one would presume, at this point, because we're post First Contact and we're post World War III stuff. So one would presume there's a one world government, but we really only see the military side, as we only see a lot of the military side of most Star Trek stuff, which is always a kind of a disappointment for me. But, I would honestly be very, very curious of what the politics of this really is. Also, come on, T'Pol, close your flap. Close the flap of your tent. But yeah, I am curious about the politics of this era of Enterprise. Ooh. You'd think they would have checked that. That did look like one of those bugs from Wrath of Khan, excuse me. You think they have better tents? Well, maybe not. Actually, no, these tents make sense. Watch, like, what if this is how Trip died? This is how Trip. Oh my god, the danger! Their trip, their camp, their tent thing got cooked on. They're gonna die! This is, like, I get that it's a bad situation. It's like, oh, it's windy and dangerous, but, like, that danger scene is so forced. Again, this is why I really love Archer more than I just really like Scott Bakula's performance of Archer, and these casual, like, friendly captain that he gets across, like the tossing of the volleyball and everything. Like, could you imagine Picard, or even, well, Sisko would do it with the baseball a little bit, but he'd still be a bunch more rigid. But could you imagine, like, Picard tossing around the old volleyball, I or whatever that ball is? I think that's just kind of funny. Also, what is Archer wearing here? This, like, gray sports shirt. Why would you even bring that ball on the ship? Why are you going to play with it? I guess they do have a cargo bay, but... I do forget, do we ever see them exercising? Well, no, we do. There's one episode. Oh, God. There's an episode in season 2 where Archer and T'Pol are running on treadmills. So I guess there is a gym on the ship. Look at those cave rocks. Not styrofoam like the original series. This isn't true Star Trek. Where's my styrofoam rocks? Poor Travis. Why did they leave poor Travis behind? Aw, buddy. Oh, that's right. He went out looking for somebody, for Trip. So I can get for talking over this thing. Oh, there's people in the dark. Ooh. I also love that they just skipped over the entire, like, we were gonna get killed in our tents by the scorpion thing. I just skipped over that whole cliffhanger. It just shows you how forced it was. So here's where this episode kind of, it doesn't lose me, but it's just sort of like, oh, I see exactly where this is going to go. Clearly hallucinating, clearly losing their crap. Again, it's kind of a predictable Star Trek story. We've seen this sort of thing numerous times on Star Trek, and I think that that's the larger problem with early Enterprise that a lot of people have, is that, like, this is early Star Trek stuff. Or this is this Star Trek stuff that we've seen so many times before. But I don't know. I just like the Enterprise version of it. It's kind of the same. It's the same thing that I think that kind of turns people on or off from Voyager. Star Trek Voyager was a show that was very, very similar to Star Trek The Next Generation, to the point where it's like redoing a lot of Next Generation. And I think people's appreciation for Voyager really comes down to when they encountered it, sort of before or after The Next Generation. I'm not saying this is a totality one, but from what I've seen, like, if you encountered Voyager at the same time or after you saw The Next Generation, you would actually kind of really like Voyager a lot more, because it tells a lot of more interesting stories and actually a little bit more complexly from time to time, or at least of the same level of complexity as The Next Generation. It's not always better. Look at that CGI effect right there. It's not always better than Next Generation. In fact, Next Generation sometimes would tell it a better story, if less complexly. Sometimes complexity does not make better. But I think that, like, if you encountered Voyager first and it was your first encounter with these sort of tropes of Star Trek, that you would like it a little bit more than you would if you had encountered it after Next Generation. And I think the same sort of thing happened here with Enterprise, where at this point, episodes like this, where, like, the crew gets infected, they start distrusting each other. That's a story that we've seen how many times in Star Trek? All the way back to the original series with the Naked Now, or the Naked Time, and then the Naked Now in TNG, and so many other stories. So this isn't new. But I like it, and I like its own, like, the flavor that's being added on here is this is the first time that we've encountered it. And I like that at least Enterprise takes advantage of its own unique story. Like, for example, to bring it back to the Voyager analogy, Voyager really just felt like TNG. It never took advantage of its unique flavor, that it was in the Delta Quadrant, that they had the Maquis on the crew. It just felt like TNG. And so it really kind of is dependent on whether you like TNG or not. If you or saw TNG or not, if you like the Voyager version of it. But if you saw Enterprise at least has its own flavor of, like, they don't know how to handle this situation because they're so new to space travel. So I don't know. People complain about it, but I honestly think early Enterprise is better than, for example, early Voyager, because at least early Enterprise kind of paid off its concept a little bit better than Voyager did. Sorry, that kind of, like, ebbed and flowed in the conversation there, but I think I got to my point. I didn't talk too much about the early CGI, but it was early CGI. Again, sort of playing up these themes of humanity's distrust of Vulcans in these early episodes. Again, I like that sort of recurring theme coming up here. No, Ethan! Oh, Ethan, this guy I just met earlier in the episode. Oh, Ethan, no! Neither does she. I mean, logical. That's actually a decent answer. There we go. See, there it is. It's an interesting sort of note here that it's like, he's not entirely wrong. Like, we clearly know he's being paranoid. It's kind of obvious, and the episode kind of foreshadows it a bunch. But because I'm not in any suspense that they're not, that he's not, they're not under the influence of something. Like, I just don't. Maybe I'm just too into the trope, but I really don't buy it. That this is, we're supposed to be surprised or guessing. But I do like Tripp's point there of, like, you Vulcans have held things back from us before. Who's to say you aren't doing that now? And building up that trust of Vulcans. Because he may be right. Like, what if there are people on this planet that T'Pol, like, knew to contact because she was Vulcan and they've been here before and they wanted to keep it hidden from the humans? I think it would have worked slightly better if they had played up her unwillingness to go to the planet a little bit more. Like, at the top of the episode, we see T'Pol. In fact, now that I'm thinking this out, we see T'Pol at the top of the episode say, like, hey, you should send down probes. Hey, you should send down, you know, some survey teams before you actually stay on the planet, before you actually visit the planet. And if they had, like, built that up a little bit more, that she was much more antagonistic to them actually going on the planet and exploring, it would have, I think, paid off the distrust here later when they say, like, hey, we don't know if you're holding something back for us. Like, you could have played up that maybe there was actually some people on this planet that T'Pol knew about and was trying to hide from the humans, and then have the reveal be that there was some, you know, weird fungus or whatever the hell that's causing them to be all suspicious of each other, that it was not actually real, and that the distrust of Vulcans was a fake thing. So I think that that's the problem with this episode, now that I'm rewatching it, is that there's never really any moment where I believe that the situation that they're trying to get me to invest in, that they are, that there are actually aliens on this planet. I never buy it at any point. And so I think if they had built up that T'Pol was much more untrustworthy, or at least seemed untrustworthy at the top of the episode, it would have helped, build up the actual tension of these scenes between Tripp and T'Pol here. It is funny though, seeing scenes like this though, between Tripp and T'Pol, knowing eventually where their relationship goes, for better or for worse, but knowing where Tripp and T'Pol end up at season 4 of Star Trek Enterprise, it does make these scenes a little bit more interesting in retrospect. I think Tripp lives at Irrational. Dramatic lighting. The lighting here is pretty good too. Like the dramatic dark lighting, under lighting of T'Pol, and then the lighting on Tripp's face, sort of illuminating him more. Decently done lighting. A bit forced, but decently done lighting for a cave set. Making it all look fairly natural with the flashlights. Oh, poor Ethan. Oh, God, I care so much about Ethan. He's totally not redshirting it. Oh, I like the transporter use here, that it goes terribly wrong, if I remember correctly. I think I remember, I might be incorrect on this. I seem to remember a story. Ooh, gosh, that is pretty gruesome, and that's totally something you feel like would happen with the transporter. Jeez, I couldn't say the word. I like that sort of like that was a good costuming makeup, though. I would have thought that the crew member would die, and that gets me back to my original point. Is I remember there being a story about I actually think the crew member was supposed to die. Ethan was supposed to die in that moment, but I think Scott Bakula pushed against it, feeling that if he had lost a crew member at this point in the mission, Captain Archer would have been much more doubtful of himself and his mission, and of being out there in the stars. And so Scott Bakula pushed for the crew member not to actually die in the episode, which I think is a good call by Scott Bakula. I feel like if he had lost a crew member, I think Captain Archer would have been a bit more upset. I mean, look at something like Shockwave, which is obviously much worse, but like, look how much doubt Captain Archer had from that. So I really think it was a good call on Scott Beck's part. See, it's... See, again, I like the build of irrationality here, that there is like levels of logic here that Trip is following, that he's clearly going down an incorrect path from an incorrect assumption based on like hallucinations. But I just really wish, yeah, like clearly he's hallucinating at this point. So I don't think they're hiding it at this point anymore. And so I think this is supposed to be like the reveal, that they're hallucinating scene, maybe. Yeah, they're clearly hallucinating at this point. So, yeah, I think this is the reveal. Like, oh, yeah, they're clearly hallucinating. There's clearly nothing actually going on here. So, again, I just really wish it had been built up further so that we had actually been on Trip's side until this point. Because I really wasn't on Trip's side until at any point, really. Yeah, see, this scene was added on Scott Bakula's behest. Also, I never really paid attention to it, but Phlox's like outfit is interesting here. I like checkerboard design. Whoever denied it, supplied it. Oh, God, I'm a child. I'm sorry, everybody. I like this. I like that Archer is trying to logically talk to Trip here and trying to talk him down. I manages to get it to work, but I know that he's like, I like that the different tactics that Archer tries throughout this next portion of the episode and their varying degrees of success at talking Trip down. I deeply enjoy that. It's going to be an uncomfortable way to sleep there, Travis. Wow! Camera angles. That's a decent upgrade, but I don't understand why it would, like, make her speak Vulcan. But I understand it, like, it's kind of like, oh, ups the creep factor and puts Trip at his offset. But I don't know. This is the thing. At this point in the episode, it's like it's kind of hitting the same beats over and over again. Trip's hallucinating. T'Pol is kind of trying to keep her composure, but things are getting a little bit worse. Like, it doesn't, like, it escalates a little bit, but it doesn't really evolve all that much. So this episode feels a bit stretched. And now that I'm, like, sitting here watching, I'm kind of like, all right, let's get to the next point. We know they're hallucinating. We know Trip's kind of on a hair trigger, and we know T'Pol's slightly more composed than everybody. But that's about it. Could definitely understand that one. I love how sometimes alien languages are just like normal words, but just like, why in the world would Vulcan's word for phaser be phasar? Like phasar, like they're completely different planets and completely different etymologies. I'm sure the word would be different. So I always find it funny that alien languages, but like Dothraki in Game of Thrones, we're all just sort of like slightly misplaced words. I know Klingon exists. I actually don't know how deeply done Klingon actually was, but I know both Na'vi from Avatar and Dothraki. Did the crew member die? Maybe I was wrong about the Scott Bakula thing. I might have made that up. I remember hearing something about that, though. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe it was just Scott Bakula pushed against it, but it didn't work. I don't know. For some reason, that story stuck in my mind, but I might have screwed it up in my brain. Alas, sorry, I'm sending you misinformation. I'm a terrible podcast host. Aw, Phlox, sad. Poor Ethan. We knew him so well. At least Ethan's death is treated with more weight than the typical red shirt. Cutler's like, let me sleep. Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, I think the actress who played Cutler died a few months after this episode and a few months after season one finished filming. That's it. Okay, so Ethan didn't die. He is dying. Okay, so I did call that right. Okay, sorry, I misheard because I was talking over it. Yeah, see, there you go. Look at more racism. You can't speak your... Speak English, dang it. This is human states of America? I don't know. Dang rock people. Again, more tactics by Archer. This is what I was talking about before. I like that Archer has multiple tactics to try and talk Trip down. Now he's, instead of trying to logic him down, now he's trying to play the friend card. Like, hey, I know you. You don't think about your training. Think about, like, something we went through together. CGI! Oh, early 2000s CGI! Oh, God, the horror! It's so scary! And I like that that failed. And now he's feeding the paranoia, and that works. Oh, look at that. The Archer lean. It's not the Riker maneuver, but I'll take it. We call them anything but rock people. I know they're made up, but come on. Call them the Rakurthuras. Ragugugus. Magmars. I like that. I do wonder, have we seen this at any point in Star Trek? Maybe someone can let me know, but has there been any Vulcan actors in Star Trek? Oh no, there has been, now that I'm thinking about it, not in the show that I'm aware of, in any show, but in the Star Trek book Enterprise: The First Adventure, which is about the first adventure of Captain Kirk on the Starship Enterprise when he takes over the USS Enterprise, the original one, right at the beginning of his five-year mission. There is actually a Vulcan actor that Spock really hates because he's an actor, and has disdain for Vulcan actors because they show more emotion than he allows himself to show. It's actually a decent book, a little bit cheesy, but a decent book, and I think that's the only reference to Vulcan actors that I can think of. If anyone can think of any more, I'd love to hear it, but I think that's the only reference to Vulcan actors that we get. And some metaphor for all of Travis throughout Star Trek Enterprise. He starts to get a little bit of a few lines, starts to have his own agency, and then the writer's like, no, 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 sleep. Go to sleep. Yeah, look at that matte painting cave. Isn't it pretty? Just a little bit. Gosh, can we call them anything but rock people? See, this scene feels unnecessary. It's like, we already knew all this. You're not really telling us anything. Yeah. Also, that shot was out of focus, which is was bugging me. The shot of Trip before this one. Something I've noticed a few times as I've been watching this episode, there's like a focus problem in some of these cave scenes, which, to be fair, I don't know if they're shooting on film or digital. I think they're shooting on digital, but it might be film. Like, yeah, this actually looks like it's on film, that I'm looking closely at it. In which case, you know, it's sometimes harder to pull focus, but I mean, this is a professional. Like this shot right here of T'Pol is slightly out of focus. Frustrating. More matte paintings. Gotta love that matte painting planet. It looks like the Vasquez Rocks, kind of, but definitely a matte painting. Because I've been to Vasquez Rocks. They are not that green. And also, now where are the rock formations? Now you're in a green field? What the heck? Yeah, like I said before, this was a good episode. I didn't love it, but it kind of has that, like, banality of, like, it's doing an old Star Trek story, but at least it kind of is doing something unique with it, in the sense, like, it's trying to build off the human versus Vulcan sort of thing. It's humanity's first trip to a new planet. It doesn't really pay them off as well as I would have liked. Like, I think you could have delved a little bit deeper into the distrust of Vulcans, like having, like, you know, T'Pol naturally be more like, push a little bit harder at the top of the episode about being like, no, we don't go down to the planet. You do this the Vulcan way. And then that sort of, you know, Archer shutting her down even harder. And then that leading to later on the more distrust of T'Pol. But ultimately, then Archer has to trust her in order to talk Trip down. When, you know, Archer tries to talk Trip down by being a friend, say, hey, you know, trust me, I'm your friend. Instead of trusting Trip, and instead of Trip trusting Archer, Archer then has to trust T'Pol. So all the elements are there. I just think they could have pushed it a little bit further. And I'm also a little bit saddened by the fact that we didn't get enough, we didn't get enough of that, like, hey, we're on a new planet. Isn't this exciting? Look at all these cool new things. And I wish we had gotten a little bit more of that wide-eyed optimism that I think a few episodes in this first episode of this season, our first season of Star Trek Enterprise, get to a little bit better. But I like the core concept of it. It's not a bad idea. I just think it, and it's not necessarily terribly executed, it's just sort of like boringly executed. And I think if you had just nudged it a little bit further, it would have been a much more interesting episode. But not terrible, just not particularly super fascinating or interesting. But that is my thoughts on Star Trek Enterprise episode 3, My thing is saying four, but I think that's because the first episode of Star Trek Enterprise was 2 hours. So the third episode of Star Trek Enterprise, Strange New Worlds, I would love to hear all of your thoughts about this in the comments. So just let me know what you thought of this episode and what you think of this this commentary track of it. I'd love to hear your feedback, your thoughts. Are you liking the commentary tracks? Do you want me to do something different? Do you like me doing more talking, less talking? This commentary track thing is kind of new to me, so I just want to make sure I'm giving you guys a good show. So if you are enjoying it, please let me know. I hope you are, because I am, and I'm enjoying just kind of ranting and making jokes at my favorite Star Trek show. Even if it's not an episode I particularly love, I still love this show. Just like every Star Trek show, there are definitely some episodes that we love more than others, but we still love it. Anyways, that's been it for this podcast. Thank you so much for joining me, and I will see you in 2 weeks for the very next episode, which I believe, what is it? It's Unexpected! Oh, that was an unexpected title now, wasn't it? I actually don't remember what that episode is even about. So that should probably tell us something about it. But I am excited to talk about that episode with you. But until then, stay on the long road, and I will talk to you later. And live long and prosper, I should say. That's my normal goodbye. I've got to make sure to do that. That's a brand. It's kind of a thing. Live long and prosper.